This is the Galaxy Wars podcast with your host, The Grays. Greetings, welcome back to another episode of the Galaxy Wars podcast with your hosts, Jim and Tom. And Tom, we're back to talking DC. We're finally here to talk about a new property, not a retread of something that we already saw with the Justice League. But we're finally going to be talking about the Suicide Squad and not the 2016 David Ayer Suicide Squad, but the 2021, 5 years later, Suicide Squad with Idris Elba, John Cena, Margot Robbie, and so many other wonderful characters that may or may not make it to the end of the movie. But as we do, we're going to spoil this movie. So spoiler alert as we enter spoiler territory. But let's talk about this for a second. We know that 2016 Suicide Squad is neither one of our favorites. Okay. Maybe the worst DCEU movie ever to be made. And we've talked about the Ayer cut coming out of David Ayer's mouth, but we've also kind of just been left with a really bad taste in our mouth with this property. James Gunn comes in, albeit think this was his first job post the canceling for what seemed to be 3 weeks. And then he got this job, and then he went back to do like consult on Endgame and all that stuff. But what did you think of this movie that's currently sitting at 92% on Rotten Tomatoes critic score and 85% as an audience score? So where are you at with 2021, The Suicide Squad?
Before you watched it, I accidentally texted you. I was pleasantly surprised, and I still am. It was much better than I thought it was going to. I thought, you know, whatever. I know James Gunn is funny. He could do humor. He could do that kind of stuff. And I think, you know, he brought some things that he's learned from Marvel on how to tell a story and how to stay coherent.
Yeah.
But I think what it did was you don't have to watch the first one. You know, it doesn't have that much bearing on this one. You know what I mean? Like,
I guess just the only, as loose as it is as a sequel, the only things that kind of stay the same are Boomerang, Waller, Flag, and Quinn. But you have to, I think you do have to watch that terrible first movie to kind of understand who Rick Flag was to who Rick Flag is now, who Harley was. Okay. So you have to watch, like, because this is Harley Quinn at her best, right? For the three movies that we've seen her in, this is the best iteration of Harley Quinn that we've got from Margot Robbie. And then you really have to see who Captain Boomerang is. He's a wasted character in, like, he's meaningless in two movies. And you really need to figure out who Amanda Waller is. Because if you're just going in here and you're like, oh, John Cena's in it, I love wrestling, I think you do have to go back and watch that first one.
The Waller stuff, I think she turned it. This is her best. First, Viola Davis is like Tony Stark and Robert Downey Jr. I think Viola Davis is made for Amanda Waller.
Yeah.
I hate Amanda Waller so much. I hate that's just because she's a very good character.
Yeah, for sure.
I hate Amanda Waller, the character, in every iteration, but I think Viola Davis makes it so much better. Makes, like, I don't know. She's so good at it. But I think this is, for everything that you said, and even Captain Boomerang, and we'll get to that, I think this is the best outing for all those characters.
Yeah.
This is the best, you know, this is the best iteration of Harley Quinn we get, even out of everything that we've seen her in. And that's why I'm never going to watch the original Suicide Squad again.
Yeah,
I'm not going to watch Birds of Prey ever again.
Yeah. Both of which happened after this one. Because, you know, when the Presidente sees Harley Quinn, he's like, you stand for everything that's anti-American. You know what I mean? And that's, you know, that was the middle finger to the patriarch was in Birds of Prey, where she's like, this is who I am, Harley F. and Quinn. So they obviously saw that in, you know, Corto Maltese, which was, I feel like Corto Maltese in the last 5 years has gotten the most press in DC Comics. Like, we've been to Corto Maltese more than we've been to Themyscira. You know, through Arrow and through DC animated stuff and Young Justice and now this. Man, that's not a destination point for me if that were a real place.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how they made it so. And she's definitely a lot more crazy in this.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, in Birds of Prey, well, she's legitimately, like, you see her have, I feel like we see, the things we see are hallucinations. Birds of Prey, it seems like she's coming out of those delusions and those hallucinations and stuff like
that. Yeah. This, when this movie was announced and it was, you know, James Gunn was attached to it, I was more optimistic, and I think I've told you this before, that I was the most optimistic for a DC property because of this. I think this was, if James Gunn were to get another, like, they toyed around with Superman, right? His Superman probably would have been amazing, but I think he's best with, at this moment, just based on what he's done superhero-wise, with a weird ensemble team. And that's where he's like, I want to go back to Ostrander's time and say, like, this is what I want. Like, I want the most...
Right.
Obscure characters.
That's, I mean, this may sound weird to certain purists, but I don't want to see James Gunn make a singular, you know, individual movie, a Batman or a Superman or a Flash movie. I think his ensembles are pretty amazing.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, our, the history that he has and our examples, they all turned out great. And this included, I think this was a great movie that for him. And when we got to, you know, we hear that we're getting some type of arm fall off boy, but they call it, what do they call it? Disconnect man the or whatever.
Detachable kid. Yeah. TDK.
And then, you know, we're getting, the polka dot man or whatever you call him. I don't even know what it is. And you know, Peacemaker in his goofy outfit, which, you know, maybe people don't get it, but that is the dumbest thing that you could come up with.
And the fact, like, Peacemaker himself, I mean, we'll talk a lot about our you know, our friend of the podcast, John Cena, but he's been wearing that costume to every appearance that he's done.
Yeah.
He's like full...
Just wearing it
like,
out.
I'm Peacemaker.
Yeah.
Like, this is what I'm going to be. I'm like, well, that's great marketing because... You know, I like that suit much better than the actual suits that he wears. You know what I mean? So I was like, you wear that toilet bowl on your head for, you know, that squatty potty on your head for a little bit. But what did you think of John Cena in this?
a very low bar, but it's his best movie. Yeah,
I would agree.
The only other one that I would say is close, and I haven't seen... Seven Fast or Furiouses or whatever he's in, or, you know, not F9 or whatever. So I'm not, I don't know, maybe it's better, but all the other stuff. And what was the comedy he did?
Trainwreck.
Yeah. That was, he was,
yeah.
I don't know. It was kind of funny, but this is his best, I think, his best acting. Or I don't know if it has a lot to do with him, but it's the best.
Yeah. I mean, he was. I think he's playing a douchebag.
I think him and Idris Elba played off each other really well as the alpha.
That's like, yeah, the biggest. That alpha. Scene when they're going through the, you know, like, just essentially the soldiers of the future. Like, they're, you know, they're trying to change the world, and they're just having like a kill off, and John Cena has the hatchet or the little knife, and he just, you know, someone's sleeping, he's just dicing them up like 8 times. So it's like, holy shit, this is super extreme. I loved every scene that him and Idris had. Honestly, I thought that they were, you
know, where they introduce them and it's the same
exactly,
story,
right? The one thing, you know, this is being, you know, spoken as is like James Gunn's best work. I feel like WB stepped in a little bit, and I know they keep saying that they didn't, but I feel like they gave Bloodsport the same story as Deadshot a little bit, where, you know, out of touch dad who has to do something to save his daughter.
Yeah. You could definitely tell that they wanted that whatever this original story was, it might have been written as a continuation for Deadshot. Yeah. And it just, you know, that's fan service that it wasn't, that we got rid of, because, you know, I am not a huge fan of his. I'm a fan of Idris Elba, but just not Will Smith.
I think that they honestly, with Will, if this gets a... I speak like I know Will Smith, but if this gets a third movie, which I think it's going to, honestly, I think this gets another one, I think Will Smith comes back. If I'm DC, I think Will Smith comes back. They left the door open. They didn't mention him. They didn't say that he was dead. There's a new, you know, right, marksman coming in. Like, what if Deadshot is the target of the next one? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it could be because he's out there. I mean, I like the way that, and, you know, we're going to be jumping around like usual, but I kind of like the way that they did their post-credit scenes. One of them meant absolutely nothing with the weasel.
What a fantastic, like, between Sebastian and the weasel, I didn't know who was my favorite character. Just every time Weasel's on screen and they're just like, and Pete Davidson, right? Like, not a huge Pete Davidson fan, yeah, but when he's on there and he's like, is that a dog? And they're like, no, it's a werewolf. And he's like ripping off his seatbelt. He's like, I don't mess with werewolves. I thought that was amazing. I thought, you know, just from, again, you touched on it, James Gunn's great with humor. If he were, and to kind of piggyback off of what you said about having a solo movie, if he were like the director of a Deadpool movie, I'd be here for it. That's the solo movie I think that he'd be, you know, fantastic at.
But in that, you know, you're right. But even in those movies, Deadpool always has his team, yeah, around them. He's always got, you know, his yeah, posse. It is a Deadpool movie, but they're always, and yeah, what is that, the cabbie's name?
Dupinder.
And the bartender and stuff. So
the bartender won't be in there anymore. Not with TJ Miller. He gone.
No, it's true. I think he could do a Deadpool movie, yeah, great, only because another thing we'll get into is what I thought was a kind of a ballsy move, and it kind of it confused me a little bit, because you expect it to be, mm-hmm, funny because it is James Gunn, but he killed all the comedians in 10 minutes.
Like, yeah,
he killed Pete Davidson, Flula Berg, Nathan Fillion, not really a comedian, but
let's focus, like, on that for a second, because the one thing I truly appreciate about this movie is that it felt like I was watching an entire year's worth of of comics just adapted from the trades to screen. And that first scene where, you know, it's very Amanda Waller, right? So it's very similar to what Tom Taylor most recently did, where he had a obscure group of heroes and then the core group, villains, whatever you want to call them, and then the core group, and you send them in there, and if they make it, they do fantastic. And if they don't, they're cannon fodder. When they walked in there and you have Harley and Rick and Boomerang and everybody else, you know, Javelin and Mongol and all those, I'm like, okay, this is your team. And then we're going to get the flashback, yeah, to how they recruited Bloodsport and Peacemaker and all that, which we did. I did not expect.
I bet. Yeah, I mean, we had Michael Rooker as Savant.
Dying first immediately. When we were, me and Chuck did the DC fandom last year when they showed all the sizzle reel and everything. And I was like, Michael Rooker and Pete Davidson die right out the gate. And they did. And you get those guys, they're tertiary characters. Blackguard, nobody knows Blackguard. Nobody knows Savant. When they killed Boomerang, I was like, shit, this is this is exactly what James Gunn was saying. Like, don't get attached to anybody. And the whole time we're watching this movie, I'm like, I'm attached to this goddamn rat. It's solar opposites again. Justice for Molly. And now we have Sebastian. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to cry because, they're going to kill the rat. They killed the finch in the beginning with the squash ball. I was over it. I was like, oh my goodness. But when they killed everybody and Flula Borgs died, and I feel bad for him because, first superhero moment, he put on 25 pounds of muscle to get blown away in 10 minutes. But I bit pretty hard on that. And I thought that was a ballsy move, because you're relying on Idris, John Cena, who's douchebaggy in film, so he seemingly can have that kind of banter. But you're relying on Idris and Peter Capaldi and, you know, David Dashmalshian to be your comic relief. Harley Quinn's going to be Harley Quinn because they write, you know, you have so much to go off of. But Polka Dot Man isn't this core DC character that everybody's gunning for. And then Ratcatcher 2, the brand new Ratcatcher, you didn't, when I saw her, I was like, I didn't expect her to be the heart of the movie. And when she turned out to be like the heart of the movie, it was a great twist. And obviously King Shark, giving him dialogue and making him Baby Huey of the DC universe, I think was a very good move. But I bit hard on, especially obviously, a few of the deaths, to be honest with you. Boomerang, Rick Flag. I was like, shit, I did not expect him to die.
Oh, yeah, Rick Flag. I was like, oh, the shark. I didn't want the shark to die because he doesn't.
He almost died 1,000 times. Like when those little squishies came out of the water and they started biting him, I was like, oh, my God, there we go. There goes Stallone.
Yeah, it's a thing. It's like, I guess it doesn't matter because it's inherently you're just going to have a million different, people come through this prison. It's a, the way Waller tells you, it's like, yeah, we have a high death rate. Yep. We're okay with that. That's our thing.
And like you're going through like so one part I didn't like, well, I liked the movie in general, but a part that I wish was there was the recruiting or the discussion like we got in the first one of how everyone else got captured. Like, I want to know how, Javelin wound up in, Blackgate. I want to know like how, where Mongol came from. And like through passing, you're like, is she an alien? Is she this? Is she that? And like, then boom, she's dead because of a helicopter. I would have liked that a little bit more. But I think that they had so many characters that they turned like an entire team into Slipknot, and just like instead of blowing him up, like,
well,
Waller only blew up one person. Yeah, they got killed on their own.
Well, I think that's the funny part is he took that moment that everybody bitched about and said, I'm gonna do it to a whole team, and basically you had to have the movie start twice because he wanted to, like, just as, poking a bear, he was like, I just want to kill a whole team off, a whole team of like big actors and actresses that are hot. Yeah. I want to get my
friends jobs and I want to kill them immediately. Like, he killed his brother was the first one to die. And he's in it twice. Yeah. You get to see him in real life and like in live action, you get to see him be Weasel.
Oh, yeah, true.
I like that they kept these weird, crazy characters that really didn't matter to the scheme of things and then destroyed them, like gave Javelin and gave Blackguard life, right, in the DCEU. And then you go to the prison when they're recruiting and you see a character who, at first, I was like, shit, that's Crazy Quilt. What, like that woman in the women's part of Blackgate, but under further review, it's a Kaleidoscope, which is even more obscure. But then when we're talking about deaths, like we talked about Rick Flag dying, did you think that it would be Idris to die and not John Cena when they had their face off? Because I personally did, knowing that there was a Peacemaker series coming after this.
I knew. Yeah. And that kind of sucked because we thought we were getting, I when it happened, I didn't like John Cena. I liked him in this, but I'm glad Peacemaker died. He was a very convoluted, and his ideals, and he doesn't have a pretty straightforward reason for doing the things he does. It's very weird and very convoluted. He thinks it's easy, but it doesn't ever really, like, his rules don't matter. So I, when he died, I was like, that's pretty weird. And then, we see him coming back. But I think that's good because it gives him, now we think, this little team is free and roaming the streets doing whatever because they have the hard drive. But are they going to be antagonists? Are they going to be?
Oh, I don't think so.
The villains of the Peacemaker story, or is the Peacemaker going to be a whole separate thing? Is he like a hired gun now? Because Steve Agee, I think having Steve Agee in the Peacekeeper series is going to be good. That's your comic relief.
And Jennifer Holland, James Gunn's wife, being in it as well is going to be great. I don't think we see as many. I don't. If we see anybody from the Suicide Squad. I would love it to be Idris because I want to see like more banter between those two. But I don't think we see any of them until the sequel. Yeah. I honestly think that Waller's going to bring in a new Suicide Squad to hunt the old Suicide Squad. So that's when, you know, Lawton. That's when Lawton comes back. That's when Condiment King. That's when you get like Crazy Quilt, Kite Man. You get all like these really super weird, obscure ones. Or you could just really just kind of tighten the reins up and you go, you know, Talon is now a member of the Suicide Squad. You know, Poison Ivy was in Blackgate. Now she's a member of the Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
And you bring in these heavy hitters. But.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like the real big names. That'd be good. You know, I would just, you know, when you say names and you do things, the fan theories start spinning. If you bring in Poison Ivy, that could lead to the eventual love story between Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn.
Yeah, and you don't need a Birds of Prey too.
They're on different sides. They fight each other and they fall in love.
Or maybe... Poison Ivy's on that team as kind of a sense of like, we'll get Harley back because of you. You're the decoy, you know, and she got, she gets picked up for like preventing eco-terrorism and she kills eco-terrorists and they implant her and then you're good to go.
Right. And Harley decides to go, you know, to abandon the search for her next boyfriend and just decides, you know, try something different. I think that's potential there. I think, and I do like the idea of more than, you know, Deadshot, which, you know, still probably a good possibility we'll see him. But, I do like the idea of bringing in the heavy hitters, like the harder guys, the guys that might not be in that prison, but might be in like,
Arkham, bring in Bane.
Or, you know, she has to go to all the prisons and recruit guys to her prison or something. I'd like to see Waller making deals with other wardens.
Yeah, that would be really cool. I, you know, if you have King Shark out there, who I don't believe they called him King Shark at all, right?
No, they call him by like his god name.
I would like if they do a sequel, and it's my theory, they bring in like Orca to fight King Shark. You know what I mean? And not Bane. I think Bane is your. You could bring Bane in, but I don't, you know, that gives you another shot at Batista finally playing Bane, you know, because he, you know, he was offered the gig for Peacemaker. In the interviews, he keeps saying like it was a small part in Suicide Squad. And, you know, according to IMDb, so to take this all with a grain of salt, he was offered Peacemaker. I'm sorry. I keep saying Peacekeeper. He was offered Peacemaker. Yeah. Who, if not the second or third star of this movie, getting a new series, he took that to do Army of the Dead.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a weird weird decision, but maybe, you know, he said he wanted to work with Zack Snyder, and you get that chance, and if James Gunn is...
But he was a James Gunn purist. He said he didn't want to do any other movies... Unless they're James Gunn, or continue in the MCU, unless it was James Gunn. Who knows why he did that? And you don't know that Peacemaker is going to get a series. I don't think they did.
I mean, they announced it before the movie finished.
True. Yeah. I guess they would probably have that conversation. Like, we're going to take this.
In the scheme of things. Batista, at this point in his acting career, in my opinion, is bigger than John Cena. You know, I don't think either one of them are leading men. I think they're best on ensemble cast, but if you look at how things are going, Batista has done more leading men movies with Stuber and, you know, My Spy than Cena has done with Playing with Fire. You know what I mean? So I think that the transition's there.
Cena has been working towards hosting gigs, and, you know, that's why he did the same thing The Rock did. He tried to lose a bunch of muscle mass, tried to get down to normal man size so it doesn't look so goofy.
He looked huge in this movie. Like, that underwear scene, I told Chelsea, I was like, we need to fast forward through this. It's making me uncomfortable. Like his arm, like he was so vascular, his arms were like enormous. Like I think, I don't think he roids, but I think like he got to.
Nah, well, I mean that's his whole thing. Is he's famously always said that he's got all natural. He won natural bodybuilding.
He got absolutely ripped for this, and I think like as we kind of get back to the movie and away from John Cena's physique. I talked about how I thought it was like a moving comic book, right? So you have like scenes where King Shark's ripping up that body in the rain. Like that's a full panel scene on a comic. You know,
the
Harley Quinn scene where she breaks herself out of prison and she, you know, she snaps that guy. She essentially hangs that guy while she's being, you know, tethered to a wall. I thought that was a very cool scene. But her scene where, like, the birds are flying behind her. It was very, very James Gunn, very Guardians of the Galaxy, like when Groot's dancing scenes. The other thing that I really enjoyed about this movie was the character arcs. I think that in the first movie, David Ayer and Warner Brothers, and a combination of both maybe, didn't really give you characters that you cared about until the very end with, like, Diablo, right? You get him at the end, and you're like, oh, I feel a little sorry for him. This movie gave you, like, even the fodder, the cannon fodder, is like it all meant something. Like at the end of the first Suicide Squad, it wasn't like, oh yeah, we're doing this for Slipknot, you know what I mean? This one, the death of Javelin is carried on until the from start to finish, you know what I mean? The detachable kid they talk about, and like it makes you care about, you know, that kind of weird Pinocchio lifestyle of Ratcatcher, where, you know, her dad's a scientist, they're sleeping with a pile of rats, which, God, can't be the cleanest, but, like, you actually care about them. And then the characters who go further in the story, like a Rick Flag, who was pretty stoic, pretty douchebaggy in the first one, very militant, hard-ass kind of deal.
He's a company man.
Yeah, his character arc increased, right? You felt bad. Like, I felt something when he died. And It's the same thing with like every single character you felt
for. And that's what I gotta say, out of all these things, out of all these people dying, some of them I got it as they were real jokes. Like, you know, the whole beginning scene was kind of a joke saying, you know, don't invest time. And that's what everybody bitched about with Slipknot was how he just died like 5 minutes in. But the Rick Flag death, I was like, he's like a real character. A huge character. Like, you can't have him come back. You can't. I mean, he's comic book accurate. He's in two movies now.
He's your anchor to both of these movies at some point.
Yeah, and now he's emotionally evolving. He's, you know, he's on the side of these freedom fighters, and he sees the problems, and he's like, he's the one pushing that for reform and pushing to have the, you know, information broadcast out there. And then he just gets stabbed through the heart, which I thought was crazy. Like, yeah, that got me. I was not expecting that. I wasn't expecting it the way
I thought Starro was going to, I thought if he was going to die, it was going to be a Polka Dot Man kind of death where, you know, he does something heroic and Starro kills him. Like, again, like, in what world, in what DC world am I going to be invested in Polka Dot Man? I love Obscure. You know that. The listeners know that. Yeah. But in this movie, I never thought I'd be like, damn, this is great. This creepy Norman Bates-like character. Like, I'm super here for it. But with Rick Flag, I think those final words that he told Peacemaker is going to be the dialogue in John Cena's character's head for the entire series. He said, you know, Peacemaker, what a joke, right? Now they need him to save the world. He's not a villain anymore. They need him as a hero. And this could be like the reform for him, right? He was, you know, even though his ethics and his code is a little clouded, he wasn't on the team to be on the team. He was Waller's contingency plan. So the whole time he's playing team. Right. He's playing like he's the good guy, but he's the one who's seemingly untouchable to Waller. You know, because he's the guy who gets hired. It's, again, very comic book-esque, where you have that double cross. And I thought that was executed perfectly. I think the twists and the turns and the character development, you know, cinematography, I thought this movie was great.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something we haven't talked about is the leaps and bounds, how much better this was visually. Like, CGI was fantastic. The look of the movie was so much better. Harley's scene when she's, going John Wick on everybody and was great. The visuals there where all the blood turned to flowers was awesome. Every bit of this movie is so much better than the other one. That's why I'm just willing to forget so easily that they exist, and just this is the one that I'd go to.
Yeah, this is definitely a movie I'll watch again. You know, this is something that if it's on TNT or whatever, right. I'll tune into it. It had way more heart. The soundtrack was good. I love that it's kind of, and it seems to be like what Marvel does a little bit later on in the phases, where they give you a timeline within the movie. You know, they go back 8 minutes, they go forward. Yeah. It was, next week we're going to talk Wrath of Man. That was a very Guy Ritchie kind of trope where, you bounce all over time and you see what happens, but then it's like, oh, wait, how did we get here? And you go back to it, the one thing that, we seemingly haven't even talked about yet is Starro the Conqueror.
And not even an afterthought. Yeah. It's just there was
a lot to get to. We're juggling 85 characters. And we haven't, is he truly the villain in this movie? Yes, but he's not the, he's not the villain until the end.
I guess you could just say it's Amanda Waller.
Yeah. As a Waller, the Coro Maltese government peacemaker, the thinker, Capaldi was amazing. I thought he was great.
Yeah.
I honestly, for everybody who was in this, I thought that there weren't any weak moments in terms of acting. Right.
That's the thing is, I don't know if I'm ever going to say this was James Gunn's best movie, because I do love Guardians of the Galaxy so much. I'd have to look and see. And even some of Super was great.
Yeah.
Some of his old stuff is really good.
Yeah.
It's a great movie. This is the best Idris Elba movie in a very long time.
Yeah,
it was
better than Hobbs and Shaw.
I'm not going to say it's his best, because obviously Luther. The Wire and Luther and stuff that, the darker stuff, he really is a great actor. The action stuff hasn't really, him as Heimdall was great, but just wasn't a lot of screen time.
Concrete Cowboys.
This is his best stuff.
Super underrated film. We're local to Philly. I absolutely love that movie, but this was a breath of fresh air because we're big Idris fans, right? We love Mr. Elba. The one thing I will say was he was my favorite in the movie, acting wise. But Bloodsport was also my favorite character in the movie because he was nothing like what his comic counterpart was. And the way that they adapted his suit to weapons and just I thought his action scenes were great. Again, I'll go back to that scene where it's him and Peacemaker, fighting the soldiers, right? And then you go to when he's trying to survive against Starro and he's just ripping pieces of metal off his suit. I thought that was amazing.
Everything has a purpose.
Were you happy with the final team? Peacemaker, Ratcatcher 2, Bloodsport, Harley, King Shark. Were you happy with it? And were you surprised that that was the five that we were kind of left with?
In a way, yeah. But also in a way that I'm surprised that they made it. But in a way, I'm surprised how much I want it. Polka Dot Man to make it. Look, he was a serial killer in the making, with a rare disease. I like how they did that too. Did he jerk off to?
I think. He definitely
to get the dots out of to get the poison out
fluids. I just don't know what he did. I thought
When he took off into the woods, I was like, I don't, is he masturbating in the woods?
Yeah, I think he was.
Those polka dots?
I love that they made, like, everything look like his mother. Like, the scenes where, like, Starro is his mom and, like, the squad is his mom. I was like, this is fantastic. I couldn't see, honestly, I couldn't see anybody helming this exact movie but James Gunn. Because you're given, you're just D-level villains and anti-heroes and just give it, like, the casual comic book fan doesn't know 90% of those characters. They know Harley Quinn. They know the four people that were in the first movie. You know, everyone, like, when Idris was cast, everyone's like, oh, it's dead. You know, he's going to play Deadshot. He's going to play, you know, Black Spider. He's going to play this. He's going to play that. And when they announced that it was Bloodsport, everyone was like, who? Who's Mongal? You know, like, who is, like, TDK? Like, that's not a character. That's just the arm fall off boy. But also, I mean, speaking of people who got big, Nathan Fillion's arms looked huge in this movie. I think it was.
I don't know.
Because they came like, on the rookie.
What has he been doing? The rookie.
He's got to look like nobody.
He doesn't do
be
Castle
like
anymore.
Those
right?
like post 40 fit cops like Elliot Stabler over in Law and Order. And you got to be able when you're in the, like the tank top and the Air Monarchs, you got to look ripped. But overall, man, I think that this was good. I like the team that we have. If this is a team moving forward, I didn't know Daniela Mercury at all, who played Ratcatcher. I think this might be like her first big movie, and man, she delivered. Like I said earlier, she was absolutely the heart in this movie. Not only for Bloodsport, but for King Shark, for you know Polka Dot Man, she was there for everybody. And I do like that there was like. You know, going into it, I didn't want to compare this to Guardians, even though it was kind of hard not to. I didn't want to compare this to Marvel. I looked at this as a continuation of the DC universe with a new director. And I think that this is up there with the better of the best of the DC movies. And this kind of fits my style as far as like quirky superhero movies, because I do.
And it's good. I think it's a good departure for Gunn in a way. Because he gets to do rated R. It's not something he would ever do. Is he good at rated R comedies? It's something he needs to learn. I mean, there's a lot of opportunities outside of Marvel. And I think he just showed that, you know, he's he's got a style, but he could change it and adapt it for certain things. And, you know, to pull off rated R and to pull off PG-13 as well as he does. And still, like, be recognizable in what he does.
Yeah, and I think
it's kind of hard to
DC / Warner Brothers is putting together a pretty good toy box. You know, they're moving away from the Snyder version, the Snyderverse, I'm sorry, and they're bringing in, you know, James Gunn's, James Wan's, Patty Jenkins. And I know they're all kind of tied into the Snyderverse, but they're moving further away from Zack Snyder being more in control. Mm-hmm. And they're bringing in like Andy Muschietti. They're bringing in people who have done franchises and are going to continue to do franchises, but they're also bringing people from the outside. You know what I mean? They're not just saying, well, this is James Gunn's or this is Zack Snyder's friend. He worked on 300 with Zack Snyder. We need to get him in. They're going out there and getting people who are willing to take risks and in a sense, willing to kind of give a little more pushback to Warner Brothers. You know, James Gunn said, this is what I want to do. Give me full control. And allegedly, that's what he said. But they said that.
Hopefully he did, because I think that's important. I don't think anybody is doing that. And I don't know. Maybe Warner Brothers learned a lesson through the whole Snyder Cut fiasco. Like, yeah, I mean, he's had a lot of missteps. And I wasn't like a super huge fan of the Snyder Cut. Yeah. It's 5 hours of whatever, four hours. And it's, you know, it's, you add extra 2 hours and for another point or half a point. So whatever. They learned that, you know, you don't know everything. You don't know your characters as well as some other people do. And to take, some feedback. I think that has always been their biggest problem is they're looking for like the paycheck right when this is delivered, or what they're not looking for long-term
storylines.
And I like
that this can kind of set up this is a kind of a good screen test for characters that could potentially come back in movies that predate the events of Suicide Squad, right? So, like, could Polka Dot Man show up in The Flash somewhere down the line? Probably, right? Could Bloodsport show up in Wonder Woman because she's, what, 20, 30 years behind us? Absolutely could happen, right? Yeah, so all this stuff, these are good screen tests, kind of... It, like TV is like a good Nielsen rating, right? Because you're getting characters that work, getting like, do we want to see an obscure rat catcher in the 90s with Taika Waititi in the Gotham PD show that's coming out, that's set in the Robert Pattinson Batman. Like, I think they did a good job just incorporating these characters in there and giving them enough life to get people to be like, okay, I want to see more of Idris as Bloodsport. I want to see more of King Shark. We don't need to see more of Harley Quinn, but Margot Robbie crushed it, and I would like to see more of her away from Birds of Prey and do her own thing.
You know what I watched today with Binks was only because I was perusing HBO and I found Shazam. And I was like, I he's so good, but he's not going to be... Yeah. In the universe, like he's in some, I don't know if they've retconned that yet or if they're going to. I'm like, but he's so good. Like, I still have those problems with Warner Brothers. How cohesive are all these stories? You have like 30, like we're gonna have 10 different Batmans by the time Pattinson comes out, and none of them are related to each other. Their stories aren't related. None of these stories are close to being related. I mean, except for, like, I guess you'd call it the Justice League trilogy sort of
Shazam kind of. Shazam fits into that because we get the Man of Steel suit at the end in that secret scene. We get the Affleck Batarang. Right. They talk about, Wonder Woman's existence. But it's just like it's Easter eggs. Like, that's really all it is. It's not a clear, this is your timeline. This is who fits in there. Yeah, could we see Bloodsport in a Shazam movie? Absolutely.
Look, not to compare the two more than we usually do, but you have to. When I see, this is how I feel about Easter eggs and how there's a difference. When I see an Easter egg in a Marvel movie, I have good faith that there's a good potential that winds up meaning something. It could, smallest Easter egg could actually wind up being a movie later on. Like, there's so much that you have to watch out for. An Easter egg in a Warner Brothers movie is just an Easter egg. It is just a callback. It means nothing in the future. Rarely have we come across Easter eggs that have been that big a deal, that haven't been changed. So, they don't mean as much. Look, we did barely dissect. If this was a Marvel movie, we would have had, 15 pages of notes, and we would have dissected every scene and had to go to, the dark web to find the moistest bits of fan theories. But this is just, it's just a movie, DCEU, and I think it's just really good. But it means nothing in the long-term storytelling in DCEU, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Until they prove me
wrong. The one thing that, the takeaway I have is, you bring in Starro, who is the Justice League's first villain in the comics, right? And you put him against the Suicide Squad, and it worked. Yeah. I thought that was cool. I like that. They did the babies, the Jaros, we'll call them, and they were getting on everybody's face. I thought that was cool. But we haven't explored a bunch of Starro's mythos, right? We know that our people, the U.S., captured him in space. But is that Starro just one part of a hive mind? Are we going to see Starro come back against what seemingly isn't a Justice League anymore, right? Because we don't know where we're at in the universe. So the connectivity issues are a huge gripe, right? That's it's a glaring red flag. It's kind of like when Harley shoots the president. She's like, I see some red flags here. I see red flags too. Is this the beginning of the new DCEU with James Gunn kind of not running it, but giving setting it up? Because we have this, we have the Peacemaker show coming out, Flashpoint again, it's kind of that reset button, that huge what if, and we'll have to see. We'll have to see what happens in Flashpoint, and that could reset everything, and we move forward from there. But right now what we're getting is a loosely adapted or loosely connected cinematic universe with various Elseworld multiverse stories that really haven't been explained. And I think you and I and the rest of the people on the network kind of spend our time trying to traverse these waters, and we just end up wasting our time because they're not willing to fix them and they're not willing to explain it. So,
right. Warner Brothers is the hardest one. And in a part of me, because I was let down by Wonder Woman movies, because the first one was so good and the second one was not so great. Part of me does get a little disappointed thinking that this May, you have him on the hook. You have James Gunn, a fantastic director, makes one of his best movies. You put out a lot of great stuff with characters nobody... When you have a great character nobody knows, this is the perfect time to make movies about him. But I just don't think they will, you know? I don't think they'll spend that much energy or time. Warner Brothers, that is.
I agree.
You know, turning any of those guys into movie stars. Idris Elba should be in every movie.
No, I totally agree. And I think that they're slowly learning, but I don't think it's fast enough. By saying, like, let's keep James Gunn busy with our properties. He'll do Suicide Squad, then he'll write, direct, produce, you know, probably, you know, have his entire family in Peacemaker. And then what happens when that's done? Like, are they going to say, all right, James, we did really good at the box office with the first one or the second one. Let's make a third one. We need you to do this. We want you to work on Booster Gold. Like, you know, we want you to do something. We need to keep you going. Because if Warner Brothers and Walter Hamada and everybody over there say, like, we don't have anything for James Gunn, Disney's going to be like, well, we got this for James Gunn. You know, we've got, you know, James, we'd like you to come over and work with Ridley Scott and do the new Alien. You know, we want you to do this. We want you to do that. They'll keep him busy. So, you know, you have to strike while the iron's hot and keep this man working, or he's just going to leave and, you know, G.I. Joe might take him to fix that terrible...
Yeah. And that's what it, right. And it does really come down to whoever gives him the most creative freedom to write his own stories. And you got to trust him because he hasn't really failed at that yet. He hasn't done any wrong. I mean, we pick apart some things here and there, but really his resume for these superhero movies is really good. So you're right. They're, you know, somebody's going to pick him up and say, you know, maybe some Valiant money,
or maybe he gets
can flow towards,
you know, gets Spawn.
I doubt maybe that.
Maybe Todd McFarlane, you know,
be great.
Puts his feelings aside and says, and his ego aside, and says, "I'll let someone else touch my baby," and lets James Gunn do it. But we'll see, man. Yeah. Let's rate this. This is what I've been waiting for since you told me you were excited on my, you know, my drive home from Myrtle Beach. You said you're, you know, you felt good about this movie. I want to know where you're at with this, because I'm stuck between two spots, and I want to know where you're at, so I might base my decision off of where you're at.
I have to go off of, like, how... Look, it was a great movie, great action scenes. Harley Quinn was different in this. I think it was her... Like, the stuff we talked about, how it made everybody better than the original. This is the best version of all the people that came back that we've seen. Even Flag, which we lost, but he's a good, you know... Him and Polka Dot Man or whatever.
Yeah.
Ratcatcher 2. It made me, you know, you have to think about the amount of how invested you are in these characters that really didn't matter before. And I got pretty invested. Like you said, Rick Flag. I was like, I can't believe they killed Rick Flag like that. And I was like, I was in on his journey at that point. So I think with all that said, I
was
give
not
it a five.
Expecting
I really
you to give it
movie.
A five. I'm with you in the sense of, like, I'm going to grade this based on how I felt coming out of the movie, right? Did I feel invested? Did I feel like I wasted my time? Were there moments where I laughed? Did I have more likes than dislikes? And I believe I had more likes than dislikes with this. I also take away James Gunn's Marvel stuff because I would imagine, I believe in my mind that there's more responsible and intelligent people running that universe than there are in DC universe. So I put that away. And how I looked at this was, this is a sequel, albeit loose sequel to 2016 Suicide Squad. So I based it off of that. And that was a zero. And I believe, you know, movies.
Right.
you can only go up from here, right? And most sequels are usually worse than the first one.
True.
One, you know, an exception that I have is, you know, off the top of my head, is The Winter Soldier, I think, is a great sequel. But then you look at, like, Iron Man 2, and you're like, oh, get away from that. This one, I really enjoyed it. I won't say that this is the best DC movie, but I will say that this is a step in the right direction. So I give it a 4.5.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is maybe, off the top of my head, I can name, like, three great DC movies. Four. So I could probably make my top five list, but I'm not going to. I'll forget. But this is definitely
this might be
this
top
is definitely
three
my top five, I think.
And that off the top of my head, I haven't thought about it, but, you know, Man of Steel was amazing, just from a cinematography standpoint, just Man looking at it, where it could have gone. Yeah, and that's the same thing I felt about
potential,
this one. Like, this was a well-shot movie. It had...
Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Man of Steel,
and Shazam. I did like the Snyder Cut, even though it was long.
That's my top five.
But I just, as I left this, and I was like, man, this had tropes from movies that I loved. This had bits and pieces from different universes that I loved without, like, the way it was shot and the way I felt after it. But the main thing is just I felt like I was watching a comic book just adapted to screen. And that's how you make a comic book movie. So I think that for DC, this is a template for them. For film directors, I think, like upcoming film directors, I think this might be a template as well. This isn't the greatest film I've ever seen. This isn't the greatest superhero movie film that I've ever seen. But this was good. This was a 4.5 for me.
Yeah.
So
it is definitely a sliding scale. You can't judge this the same as all. You could judge all superhero movies under one umbrella and then you get all crazy and you have, you know, your top 30. Or you say your favorite DCEU movies and your favorite Marvel movies. And this is one of my favorite DCEU movies. I really liked it. And that's if I put it up against all of the Marvel movies, maybe I would come down from five. But where this is in DCEU, and it made me, you know, care about a lot of characters I didn't think I'd care about. And it made me, you know, hate Amanda Waller properly and, you know, like I said, I think this puts Idris Elba where he's supposed to be, acting the way he's supposed to be and doing the things he's supposed to do. Like, I think he's that good of an actor, and he should be an action star.
Hopefully he can make Bloodsport a household name, and DC just doesn't waste him. But that is too TBD. But next, we're gonna get out of here. Next week, we're gonna come back and we're gonna talk about Guy Ritchie's latest movie, Wrath of Man, starring Jason Statham, that we've seen. This was actually supposed to be this week's episode, but, you know, when in Rome, we're going to talk about Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
subscribe to all the shows on the network. Follow us on social media. We'll be back next week. Here's $20. Buy yourself something nice.